now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
We should be looking forward to another intriguing weekend in the Six Nations, but instead, the politics and the backroom dealing in the boardrooms of professional rugby have dominated the headlines once again. As the RFU and the Premiership clubs look to cast the championship adrift, we ask what next for the game's grassroots. And we will, of course, preview some fairly big clashes in the Six Nations, including Ireland's trip to Twickenham and the wooden spoon decider between Scotland and Italy. I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and with me are Owen Slott and Stephen Jones. Gentlemen, good day to you both. Owen, I'm going to start with you because a week off last week.
Well, easy. It wasn't a week off, just a few days.
Well, sorry. A few days.
No one noticed.
I mean, you got on an aeroplane and you flew somewhere and I mean, you probably thought that this was this sort of downtime just between the Six Nations would be a good time to go away. But
well, part of the reason I went it was I was so excited that Jonesy was going to be back on the pod this week in the studio that I sort of
Thank you very much to refresh myself.
Jonesy was excited. I was excited for Jonesy always. Sorry, I shouldn't. Can't really go on about that too much, can I?
No.
So, yeah, so Lawrence, I went on Monday evening, and by Tuesday, Dai Young had been unseated at Wasps, Alliance had pulled out at Saracens, and the championship had been knifed by the RFU. I mean, just a nice quiet day in rugby politics.
In 24 hours. I mean, Stephen, welcome back, very, very, very genuinely. I mean, have you ever known a rugby season in all your experience, all your years of covering this wonderful sport? That's sort of panning out quite like this one, because it's just simply extraordinary from the minute the World Cup kicked off to, you know, to where we are today and where we're going to be by the end of the season. I mean it's biblical, isn't it?
It is. You know, you're almost scared to turn on the radio in the morning or look at the paper to see what other disaster or sensation has helped. They say no publicity is bad publicity, but obviously that's not right, because when people are seeing the game, for instance, the game strangled at the grassroots by Big Brother, that's not good. As you say, Lawrence, I mean, the David Young story is a big story, but actually, in the general scheme of everything else, it almost got consumed in everything else. It's something every day.
It was the bottom of the page, the Dai Young. I mean, this is a guy been at Wasps for 9 years.
And a good guy, and who actually saved the club when they needed saving.
Chaps, we'll get on to Wasps and Dai Young in a minute, because, you know, there may be one or two of us that know a little bit about that. Let's go to the big story, and I say the big story, and I mean, they're all big stories, but the RFU slash the funding for the championship. There's always two sides to this, and we're going to try and be, as we always are, fairly balanced on this particular pod.
Oh, we don't want to be balanced, do we? Can we just not get stuck into everyone that we dislike?
Well, we can do that, and we've done. But what, I mean, okay, let me just start with this. Jonesy, let's start with you. What does this decision to cut the funding in half mean for the championship clubs? I mean, what does it mean for rugby? What does it, you know, what does it mean for the championship?
What if you cut anybody's funding in half, Lawrence? If you're a grocer's shop, if you're Sainsbury's, if you're News International, cut anyone's funding in half, they're going to struggle horribly. It's a bitter blow. Their funding now per year, as far as I can see, will buy them one player, and not even an international player. That's all they've got left. What it means is, A, the horrendous savagery of the RFU and Premier Rugby, because both of them are cutting what they give to the championship. It means they're ignoring the evidence that the championship is a brilliant proving ground. I don't know if anyone follows Twitter, but Moritz Botha on last week said, look, they're saying that the championship is useless to the premiership. Will all those who played championship rugby please tweet? Over 100 did, including two members of the current England squad. It's more than myopic and nearsighted. It's disgraceful.
I mean, the interesting thing from my point of view, the RFU came out, Bill Sweeney, the CEO, Conor O'Shea, both very new in the role. So the emotions probably from the championship are even rawer because the fact that this news has been delivered by a couple of individuals who have, you know, only been in the hot seat a little while. The RFU were very clear with their statement saying that there was a number of preconditions put in place to meet that funding. You know, such things as having the ambition of being a premiership club. There was four or five, and none of those had been met, or not sufficiently the targets, the KPIs, if you like. But when I look at the championship, there's probably only three or four clubs that have got the ambition or even the ability at this moment in time to get into the Premiership, to the promised land. The likes of, you know, of Ealing Trailfinders, the likes of Nottingham, Cornish Pirates, who are building a new stadium down there. So, I'm not sure that relationship between the RFU and the Championship is necessary, whether they've actually sat down and been realistic about those ambitions. And Owen, you were at Ealing Trailfinders against Bedford on Saturday.
So you've got two clubs that are on different sides of the championship argument, if you like. So you've got Ealing, which are ambitious and want to fund a promotion bid. And then you've got Bedford, who are hanging on to professional rugby on the back of the funding that they get from the RFU. Mm. So I'm not convinced that RFU giving £500,000 to Bedford every year is necessarily a good use of its money, because people saying, oh, it's going to kill the championship. Well, there's still going to be a championship next season. There's still going to be a place where those players play. But the fact is that the large majority of them are going to go nowhere near the Premiership. And the RFU is effectively funding an income for a massive army of players who aren't going to go up. Now, I know that the Championship is a good place for young Premiership players to go and play, and I think that should always remain the case. But if you're actually a part-time Championship club, that's even better for a Premiership club to work with. Because you can be a Lewis Liner at Harlequins, if you like, train every day at Harlequins, and then just go for two, three nights at Richmond and play and get your game at the weekend.
I totally disagree with that. Bedford are one of the great clubs. If ever you go there, even now, the buzz and the fans they have is tremendous. Bedford have got a perfect right to play in the division as a full member with full funding until such time as maybe a sugar daddy or investor comes along. If they don't, they're keeping rugby alive in Bedford, week in, week out. They've got a great coach, they've got a great setup. They've nurtured so many players, they've got a perfect right to have the full grant.
And the interesting debate which this throws up is what should the structure of English rugby look like? Where does the amateur game start and the professional game, where does the professional game start and the amateur game finish? And I think that's a really interesting debate to have, because at the moment, it probably finishes halfway up the championship, doesn't it? You've got some semi-professional clubs in terms of their finance and resources and ability. Then you've got those that have got a little bit more backing and investment. They're fully funded. And then you've got the professional game, which is funded by a number of individuals, the RFU, you know, all the other TV money, etc. And it's, for me, it throws the interesting question, what is the RFU's role in professional rugby, and what is the RFU's role in rugby full stop? And this is something I think that the leadership of the governing body need to come out and tell us, because what they've done is they've made themselves look like the bad guys here, quite honestly, by just, you know, knifing the championship in the back, no warning about it, just coming in and slashing their funding. What I think needs to happen is a wider statement around their role as the governing body. Are they running the professional game? Because it doesn't look like they are to me. And in a couple of years' time, CBC will take that game away from them. Are they running the England team only? Are they running the championship? Or are they trying to be the guardians of the entire game? And I do sympathise a tiny bit with the RFU because I do feel that they can't do everything. Can't run the professional end of the game and the amateur end of the game and possibly make their budgets stick together.
Lawrence, what they need in this case is a vision, and that's what they haven't provided. They haven't provided a vision. They've just said, we think we can save £3 million here. Sorry, Championship clubs. I mean, Jonesy, we sort of disagree, but I can see both sides of this completely, and I don't really know what's right. But there's no vision. They just cut some costs here. I mean, what they haven't addressed is how do Cornish Pirates get promoted, because that's almost impossible now. They're legislating against it. They're allowing that to happen. So why wouldn't you want a professional franchise or club in Cornwall where you can develop more players? Well, of course you would, but they're making it impossible. So where's the thinking on that? The part of the problem is top three divisions of English rugby are run by three different entities. You've got the Premier League, PRL, who runs the Premiership. You've got RFU, who runs the Championship. And then the NCA, the National Clubs Association, run National One. They don't even talk to each other.
No, they don't.
Richmond are in National One. London Scottish are in the Championship. They share a ground. The two entities have not even worked out how they can play on different weekends. Seven weekends of this season, they've been put on the same ground on the same day.
Lawrence, your point is a spectacularly good one. It's the nail on the head. There are two games. And when you say, where does the pro game start, where does it end? You were quoted as saying there should be two pro divisions, which there should. Well, what if you started again, if you demolished the RFU and started again, you'd have a professional a company running the Premiership, Premiership 2, and probably National 1, and the rest, all the glorious game out there, run by the RFU.
Well, also, if you're a professional club, you've got 46 players on your playing roster. At any one time, you know, at least double figures are injured. You know, your chances of putting out a second team A-League fixture are non-existent. You know, I was lucky enough not to have to play in too many of those games, but when I did, you look around the team and you're thinking, wow, you know, we had to bring in a load of ringers from various different clubs just to put out a second team side. Now, I think the Premiership clubs have got to ask themselves the question, what is the point of that A-League? You know, is it genuinely, you know, developing players? I don't think it is in any way whatsoever. So should they not partner with a club in the Championship, which was what Nigel Melville was trying to promote? Because
bless
you know,
him.
Well, in my, you know.
Oh, seriously, Nigel Melville achieved pretty much next to nothing in his time at the RFU, but that was a great plan.
What was a good plan?
And the clubs rejected it.
The structure of professional rugby needs to include the 12 teams in the Premiership, and I think it does need another professional league, you know, in the league below. And, you know, everyone talks about ring fencing. I wouldn't ring fence the Premiership, but you do need at some point to ring fence the professional game and say, right, this is the end of professional rugby. Anyone below that, you know, you shouldn't be paying your players. Just enjoy the game as it has always been, and then you'll create a structure whereby you can feed in. And,
well, here's another way of looking at it. Do we really need a Division 2 of professional rugby? I mean, in Ireland, they've only got four professional clubs or provinces. Scotland have got two, Wales have got four, or they'll keep on trying to kill one off, don't they?
There's a lot more players registered to play rugby in this country. I'm not suggesting that's a good or bad thing, but it's just a fact. So the number of players registered, the number of clubs registered in rugby is greater. So therefore, you know, to say that we should only have one professional league because Ireland only have one, or vice versa.
But should we be paying should we be paying for the second division if market forces don't bring
They are currently paying for, because they're holding on to players that are getting very little games in the Premiership. So, you know, I genuinely think.
Well, that's the point that I completely agree with. It's a great training ground for those young coming through potential stars to shine. I mean, that was Nigel Melville's catchline when he said that every Premiership club should buddy up with Championship club. He said, you go and see the Championship and it says, come and see the stars of the future.
But also, it's not just about playing. Surely, when you were talking about a vision, you know, if you're in charge of the RFU, you're thinking, well, where's the next conveyor belt of England coaches coming from? You know, should we not be placing people strategically in the Championship? Mm-hmm. You know, if we're funding, then we should have a say on how it's run. You know,
and referees funding, as well. And referees.
So we can produce referees. If you're a coach going into the game, don't get thrown in at the deep end in the professional game. Actually go and coach some people week in, week out in the Championship. And I just think, as you say, there's a lack of vision. I understand that if you provide money, there needs to be a return on investment. But there needs to be collaboration. Sit down with the Championship club, sit down with the governing body and say, right, how can we make this work?
There are a huge mass of players out there. Whether we should have done this or not, we've made a lot of professional players, masses of them. Some of them hardly ever play. Now, Premiership Rugby spokesman told me on Friday, I said, where are these players going to go then? He said, we're going to boost up the Premiership Cup and the A-League.
Oh,
so that's where they're going to go.
Now,
the A-League, those are the two non-competitions. And thirdly, just one more point, you're talking about KPIs. Twickenham I insisted they tell me what the KPIs were. In the end, they admitted there weren't any. They'd given five general areas that they wanted the Premiership clubs to be better at. They never wrote them down, and they were not what we call KPIs. And that is the basis, the woolly basis on which they've been trimmed.
Listen, when the Championship clubs went in and were presented with this KPI nonsense about you haven't met this KPI, you haven't met that, that was just a presentation from a sort of lesson one of management consultancy. This is what you haven't met. If the RFU had decided they wanted to support the Championship, they could have rewritten that presentation and produced a different set of KPIs and said, tick, 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 you're great, carry on. They just found a way to knife them.
But it goes back to a bigger, wider issue. Who is running the professional game? Mm. Is it the RFU? Is it PRL? Is it CVC? Who is running? And when I say the professional game, you know, the Championship is a part of the professional game, as far as I see, because there's a number of clubs there that, you know, that pay their players.
But it goes beyond the Championship.
And what the RFU
Lawrence.
Is saying is that, you know, we're not running it because we're not prepared to fund it, and therefore they're not going to get anything out of it. So, I mean, I just think the whole thing has been ill thought out and will ultimately need reviewing yet again.
Well, as you have seen from the Times today, there's a legal challenge already from Doncaster Knights. So the Steve Lloyd, the president of Doncaster Knights, has been consulting lawyers. They say that the PRL is running like a cartel and anti-competitive, and he reckons he's got a proper legal case against them. And he'll be saying to the RFU, listen, give us a moratorium. Let's just calm down a bit, sit and have a chat about exactly what is the vision. Give us a year, and then we'll just put this legal case on hold for a while we do the grown-up thing and work out how rugby could go forward.
The slot family holiday is going on hold because you're not allowed to go away if there's going to be all this breaking news, you know, in the next few days, weeks ahead, for sure, Slotty.
Well, you know, sometimes on the mountains of the Alps, they need to see some quality as well, you know. not just in the newspapers.
Right, we're going to leave the Championship debate there. It's bound to have, you know, it's bound to rumble on and on and on, but... what we have got coming up on the horizon is the next round of Six Nations matches, and I guess we've got to start with England against Ireland. Interesting, isn't it, this one? It's the first game that England play at Twickenham. Ireland are unbeaten. You know, there's lots of talking points. I guess Farrell against Farrell. Ireland have yet to hit top gear. They've been thumped by England on a couple of occasions since they last met at Twickenham. I mean, is Eddie Jones sort of feeling the pressure? Is he likely to revamp his squad a little bit? Is he likely to inject anything new into his squad, Jonesy?
If he's not feeling the pressure, I think he should be, because there's still a lot of controversy about the squad and about the way they play. There's still a lot of horrible off-the-field stuff that's going on that I think people are now finally saying, for God's sake, shut up before the matches, Eddie. I still think it's tinkering. Who was the England football coach they called Tinkerman? Was it Sven?
Ranieri.
Ranieri.
He's your old mate, Lawrence, yeah, isn't he? He tinkered at Chelsea and then went and won the title for Leicester.
For Leicester, yeah.
I mean, one person's tinkering is another person's horses for courses, I suppose. But England still, even in that, with the excuse of that horrible hurricane up in Scotland last week, still didn't look anything as coherent as they should. And I think they're favourites on Saturday, but I think Ireland got a great chance. Ireland are coming back a bit.
Owen, you went out to, first of all, to Portugal, and then you spent a little bit of time with the England team down in the Kensington Gardens Hotel or whatever it is. But Ireland have come off the back of a couple of beatings from England, once in the World Cup warm-up match and then previously at Lansdowne Road, the Aviva Stadium. I mean, is there a danger? I mean, they're going to be smarting, aren't they? They're going to be out for revenge. Yes, they know Twickenham is a hard place to come and this is England's first home game, but... surely they'll be, they'll fancy their chances, and they'll have that kind of extra motivation.
I don't know if it's a revenge theme type game. I think they'll just be motivated anyway because they're feeling confident again. I mean that would appear clear, I think, from what's happened. There's a new wind has blown through the squad. They seem to feel more relaxed and happy with Andy Farrell in charge, which is bloody easy when you've had two home games and won them both. And you know there's been no proverbial hitting the fan yet. But I think they're in a good place.
Okay, so I take your point. I mean, Jones, if we look at it a different way, neither side have yet to hit top gear. True. Ireland haven't played their best but yet remain unbeaten. England, you know, compared to what we saw in Japan, nowhere near their best, and you'd like to think that at some point they'll hit top gear.
Exactly. One of those teams, Lawrence, has got a great chance to come through and put down a marker for the rest of the season and maybe even become Championship favourites, because whoever it is, they've got it in them to put up a really definitive performance, but they've also got it in to be really disappointing. I think that actually deep down, Ireland are probably the better and more organised side. And my God, I don't know about you, Lawrence, but I was taken aback by the bile that was directed at Joe Schmidt when he left, because no one saw that. It was incredible.
Good point.
But having said that,
God, they went from, didn't they?
But Farrell's in there now. He's obviously a great motivator, etc. He will look back to last year, I think, and say, God, we were awful last year. We've got to get revenge for that. And I think it's a great chance for both teams. I think the winner will become favourite for the title.
I think the other thing, everyone talks about, you know, well, not everyone, but there's rumblings that the Ireland players are suddenly having a bit more fun, you know, and the shackles are off. Well, having more fun doesn't always equate to, you know, to better results. I would argue that better results equate to having more fun, really. I mean, that's the way I look at it. So yeah. It's going to be fascinating to see, because the pressure is on. Where do you think, if any, any area particularly, that Eddie Jones will either be forced to make changes or will feel he needs to make some changes to what anything that we've seen either in Paris or in Scotland?
Well, I'd like to put this forward as my idea, but Barnsley actually put it in the Times this morning. Ireland have always had a good kicking game, and because of the history of Irish sports, they've been very good at winning the high ball. They will be looking at Elliot Daly on the left wing, and they'll be rubbing their hands with glee. As Stuart Barnes said in the Times, Sexton and Murray will put up the high ball on Daly on that wing. Andrew Conway is it will be against him. He's an absolute master of that art, and they'll be rubbing their hands together for that. So should there be a change there?
I think, Lawrence, I think we were talking about great play here, but Tom Curry, I think that they've got to try and find a number 8 and put Tom back to where he belongs. And he's doing the best job he can, but also 8-9 worries me, because Eddie's never cast the net wide for a 9, for the next 9. He's never brought him in. I mean, we went to Willie Hines, who did valiantly in the World Cup, but I don't think he's actually an international player. Ben Youngs has struggled a bit as well. But these are the only two that are in the squad. He's got to find two more 9s to come into the squad.
I agree with you, Steve.
And 8 as well.
He's nowhere near it. I mean, he hasn't got another 9 in the squad.
You know, you could argue Andy Farrell has recognised the need to take something out of CJ Stander's game, get him out the number 8 position, and since he's put him into the 6th berth, he's actually been man of the match.
That's a good
once
point. He's done the opposite to Eddie, hasn't he?
Yeah, so I think he's realised that, you know, he's not the dynamic number 8 that you want off the base of the scrum, but actually, you know, since he's been moved to 6, his game has gone up immeasurably. So I'm like you. I never really understood the Curry selection. I don't think learning on the hoof is what the player or the coach or England fans need. Actually, he's going to be a great number 8. Well, let him learn that in playing for Sale, or let him learn that playing somewhere else.
What you've got here is what we all, I think, seem to agree should happen and what is going to happen. Oh. But I think we all agree that Curry shouldn't be 8, and I think we all probably agree that there should be a different number 9.
I'm pushing Alex Dombrand, but I actually agree with, I mean, I think he is still got a few more things to add to his game. The player they should be picking is Sam Simmons, week in, week out, delivering unbelievable quality and work rate. And if this was the Crusaders or the Auckland Blues, you know, be celebrating his 15th, 20th cap by now.
I know, but the point is, Lawrence, whatever you think, whatever we think, Jones isn't switching, is he? No. He's sticking with Curry at 8, and he's sticking with either Ben Youngs or Willie Hines at 9. And that is not changing.
The train is now approaching Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Like England, Wales want to win, confirm that they're still kind of title contenders. It's the first trip on the road for France following two home wins, and it'll be interesting to see how they adapt. And obviously, we can't not discuss Sean Edwards' return to the Principality. I'm sure he'll get a rousing ovation for everything he's done. And how much, I wonder, of his inside knowledge will affect the outcome of the game. So, lots of talking points. What do you make of France? I mean, was there enough in the first game to suggest that they, other than Alex Dupont, who's just been mesmeric, that they've got, you know, what it takes to go on and win this title and win this Grand Slam?
I think France are like pretty much every team in this championship, is we don't really know how good they are. That's why I think this championship is so intriguing, is every team has shown that they're half decent and can be half average as well. Mm. This weekend coming up, there's three really good games, and you can't tell who's going to win each of them. I mean, actually you can't. There's an argument each way for all of them. Has the new French Revolution really changed things, or did they just have a really exciting first day out against England and are going to go back to where they were before because they're second time out they weren't so hot? Wales likewise have shown glimpses of exciting stuff. Apparently Alan Wynne-Jones can offload from any position in the pitch, but they haven't put together a proper performance yet. So I don't know, I just think it's fascinating.
I think the one thing that does stick out with France is that when their starting team is very exciting, I think their fitness levels drop off in the second half, as they have done in both games. Yeah. And I'm not sure their bench has quite got the same impact as it needs to have against a really quality opponent. So I think that you could argue that they're learning about themselves as a group. That there was always going to be, you know, you throw the balls up in the air and your average age is 23 and your oldest player in the squad's 30. You're going to learn a lot about your team.
Hopefully they're going to be incredibly exciting, because we all want them to be good. We all want them to be better than they've been for the last 4 years.
We can agree on that as well.
Yeah, but once they become good,
agreement everywhere.
Once they become good, we want to be rubbish again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We'll build them up and then we'll knock them down. Yeah. That's what you're supposed to do in the
exactly.
media.
Wales, very disappointing in Ireland. I thought the way they conceded up front and they conceded the tackle area and all that was very unlike them. I think they'll come up fighting. I think they have a kick in the backside from their coaches.
Yeah.
I think Alan Wynne-Jones and Talib Ifalatau have needed the games. They've not played hardly any rugby. I think they'll both be back. They cruelly, cruelly missing Jonathan Davis in midfield.
Oh, yeah.
Defence, no question. If Dan Biggar is fit, which I hope he is, because I just think he's a warrior, I'd also put Gareth Davis at scrum half for them, who's also a warrior, and take them on in a physical battle. I think they've got a chance. Liam Williams is fit to play. Or is he match fit? Obviously not, but he's almost fit to come back. So I think they've got a good side in the making there. I think they've got to win on Saturday. They have to win on Saturday, otherwise the season is a disaster. If they win, they can kick on.
And I think the Welsh fans will be a factor as well, because they played Italy in the first game, then they had to go on the road to Ireland, and this is the first, I mean, this is a tasty opposition now, isn't it? Wales, France, proper test match. Not that I'm belittling Italy, but I sort of am, really, because it was so one-sided. It's just a non-contest. So,
do you think, Lawrence, that the pressure here is a factor? So, France have 1-2. Everyone likes them again. New regime, etc. They're all young. The expectation isn't on them. Wales have got a new regime. Haven't convinced. Really need to get a win. France have almost got a free hit here, and Wales have got to get a victory.
Yeah, I think they have, in the sense that, you know, but there's something a bit more steely about the French, and I might be completely wrong, and they might capitulate, but I've seen Toulouse, and let's be honest, the spine of this French renaissance, if you like, is Toulouse. You know, Entomac and Dupont and some of these other, you know, exciting players. And Toulouse are unbeaten in Europe, and they've gone to Gloucester and won games. they've gone all over Europe and managed to win in a kind of way, and in a sort of slightly un-French way. So I think that there is a bit more about them. Before, away games for France were a bit of a shot to nothing, but I think there's an expectation, and I'm sure Sean Edwards will be delivering this message. You guys playing for your clubs have been beating these sides regularly, so there's no reason why playing for your country you shouldn't be going in and feeling confident you can win this game and beat them regularly. And I think it's up to Wales to change that and challenge that by coming out the blocks fast and putting a bit of doubt in the French minds, because I could tell you who's the more confident side at the moment. It has to be France.
What do you think of the Sean Edwards element in this? Because he'll obviously take a French team to Wales and tell the French boys, listen, I know how you can win this game.
I don't agree with that. I can't remember what you said, but I don't agree with it.
It was bloody smart what I just said.
I don't agree with it, though. Sean will demystify the whole experience for the France. Yeah. He'll say, look, there's been a lot of noise, but don't worry, they're all drunks from Abertillery.
He'll demystify the
whole thing.
Sorry, what did he say?
He's been there and done it, and he understands it, and he'll explain it to the France, and they won't be as terrified as they usually are.
But conversely, will Wales not go, oh, we know what Sean's up to, we know what to expect? I mean, does it work the other way as well?
It's an intriguing contest, and a bit like the first game, England and Ireland, you'd obviously back the home team in all these games, but it's going to be a tough one, that, and we'll wait and see. Let's move on to Italy against Scotland. Both sides have lost matches so far. I think we can safely say that the losers of this game are probably destined to finish with the wooden spoon and bottom of the pile. And obviously there's the wider, you know, matter of the Finn Russell situation, which has been sort of managed in different directions, really. Finn Russell's had his say. The Scotland management have tried to take the initiative and have their say a little bit.
It's been incredible, that, hasn't it? It's sort of divided.
I'll tell you who hasn't
divided
said
the world.
I'll tell you who hasn't said anything about it.
Stuart Hogg. Yeah.
Who is the captain of Scotland. You know, I'm not surprised he hasn't said anything, and that's not a criticism, because he's got a choice, but he's chosen not to say anything. And I just find that fascinating, because I think in this world of I'm just craving leadership all over the place. I'm craving leadership at the RFU. I'm craving leadership everywhere.
That must mean he's on Russell's side.
Well, he's clearly a friend of Finn Russell's. Yeah. You know, there's no doubt about that. But he's also Scotland captain, and I think, you know, he's neither come down one way or the other. And look, I get that, because, you know, he could argue, well, it's too big an issue for me to get involved in. But the reality is, Finn Russell's not back in the team yet, is he?
If he felt
very strongly against Finn Russell, or one way or the other, he would have had a word with Gregor Townsend, and he needs to come back immediately.
But are we not talking a bit too much like media people here? You say that Stuart Hogg's not said anything, but does he actually, what does it serve him to come out and make a public pronouncement? Because he doesn't actually have to serve the newspapers and the broadcasters.
No, it's not about serving the newspapers.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying the people he needs to talk to, one, Finn Russell, two, Gregor Townsend, and three, his team. Yeah. And we don't know how much of that he's done. So, unless he's a cipher, he's done all of that.
No, that is a fair point. And he's also, could argue, he's got, you know, he's had other things to think about, including his own game. Scored a fantastic try for Exeter.
Well, the fact that he's cost Scotland two victories in successive weeks.
I don't agree with that necessarily. I think there's a lot of other factors that have cost Scotland.
Did you see him touch down on Friday night?
He would have had a load of stick from the Exeter boys, and it would have been great. And he's seen the funny side of it. But it strikes me that the Scotland squad are behind Gregor Townsend, not behind Finn Russell. That's all I'll say. And his silence suggests that he is.
Well, they've got one chance, Scotland. I mean, Italy got one chance as well. Italy have got to win this game. Otherwise, was that 26 on the trot or something like that?
Yeah, 26.
Italy have got to win this game. Or maybe just show us something. But if Scotland lose, the biggest possible casualties are Scotland. Because if Scotland lose, then it's disaster. And Greg's really under pressure then. And Finn Russell is going to have to come back as captain and coach.
Yeah, before we have the naysayers jumping on, I mean, Georgia would get thumped by the majority of the teams playing in the Six Nations as well, by the way.
Yes.
I think Wales would have easily put as many as 40 points on Georgia. There's every evidence that Scotland would comfortably beat Georgia as well. So, and maybe Italy would too. So, you know, I was slightly encouraged by the tries that Italy scored. The last try that they scored, was it Menozzi that scored the final try of the game? That wouldn't have looked out of place in anyone, in any side.
Maybe we could have an invitation team as the sixth nation every year, and we could all just agree where we'd rather go to.
Listen, there's some people trying to invite South Africa in, so let's just forget about that for a second. Because South Africa have got a perfectly good rugby setup going on. They're world champions. What we don't want to do is give them a leg up and make them even better than they already are.
Give them more money.
Let's give them a seat at the table in the biggest rugby tournament in the world. No.
But listen, it's going to be so tense in Scotland, Italy, and actually, when you think of it, it's three brilliant games for different reasons.
Which do you think is the tie of the weekend? Because as you've just said, I think it's an amazing weekend because there's so much on each of them.
The teams that are unbeaten, which is France and Ireland, are both going away. For me, that's where the spotlight is. If they, you know, for different reasons, obviously, than the other one, but whoever's still unbeaten by the end is obviously in the box seat, without saying too obvious, is the contender.
But what a great weekend, though.
I would guess that everyone will have been beaten by the end of the weekend.
Well, let's hope the weather doesn't beat us all, because that we're going to move on to any other business.
That's like a segue, isn't it,
And Lawrence? The weather has been...
You old broadcaster, you.
The weather has been... Well, it's been biblical. I'll use that word again. I mean, it's. I was in the East Midlands, which is a wonderful part of the country, and it brought back a lot of memories for me because Welford Road is a fantastic stadium, even if the team is not quite as formidable as it once was. Neither is the Wasps team either. So I was there, and then I went to Northampton as well. But to see the players playing in awful, appalling conditions was quite humbling, really. Sort of reminded you of the mindset you had to get into when you've been training all week in glorious sunshine, and then you come out on Friday and Saturday and you don't even recognise the weather.
Did you feel, Lawrence, having seen those two games, did you feel that it was just an extension of what you've seen in the Calcutta Cup, as in players struggling to execute rugby skills and having to do the best they can, or did you feel it was a different type of game, those two?
No, it was a different type of game. I think the conditions in Scotland were at a different level to anything that we've seen for a while. I think in Leicester and Wasps, difficult conditions, but just players who just haven't quite got the confidence to play in a different way. And I thought Northampton and Bristol was actually quite an interesting, fun game to watch, really. But the weather has played its part, Jonesy. I saw you've been quite active on Twitter. You and I were down at Lydney Rugby Club, which is... Wayne Barnes has been a big supporter of that rugby club. He's been he's had a couple of fundraisers which we've attended, but they're currently underwater, and the whole rugby club is at the minute. And I'm sure there's one or two probably in Wales that are suffering.
There are Lydney. I mean, we had a great night there, a wonderful night.
I wasn't
night.
Invited, well, by the way. Just in you case can, there, anyone's
it was just
wondering,
celebs, it's
you,
celebs
you
only.
Could, yeah. You can remember it, Jonesy. I mean, yeah. After all those snakebite and blacks and
Wayne
shots you were feeding me, I can't remember any.
Charming.
If you're listening, Wayne, thanks for that.
To be serious, Lydney have only just sort of completed the work on their clubhouse, and now it is literally underwater. Mm. And it's a desperate thing for them. I think there's a crowdfunding thing for them. So if you're in the Lydney area, or if you've ever played there, or if you're in the Forest, they are a great club, great emotional, great community club. But also, just looking around this morning, as you said, Lawrence, a lot of Welsh communities are underwater, which is obviously a bit more important than the rugby. But the following rugby clubs are all being... well, buried in water. Pontardawe, Trebanos, Cardiff Harlequins, Risca at the Stores Field, where I played many times when I was in my teens. Great ground, right by the River Ebbw, so there's no surprise there, I suppose. Blackwood, Wattstown, Machen and Bedwas. Machen and Bedwas, two great... The derby between those two was made Celtic and Rangers look like a tea party. And those two clubs are underwater. Bedwas is a great club, and so is Machen. And so add those to Lydney. Wales and the West is really in a nightmare area. So we'd just say, if you're listening and if you're near one of those clubs or any club, just check they're okay. Check there's anything you can do and join and help, because we need to get them back on the road.
Well said.
Very well said. We all agree on that, that's for sure. There were some big away wins now in the Premiership for Exeter, London Irish, who are just going from strength to strength. Bath picked up a crucial win with a late try, and of course Bristol coming from 14-0 down.
Can I just say that's Bath with a half decent number 8 who's come back into the game. Is that Mercer?
Yes.
He played half a game for England and then got tossed out with the rest of them.
It's amazing actually how many players have sort of come into that squad and sort of, you know, had a quick look and then gone again.
If there was a new coach, Zach Mercer would be back in the running.
So Bristol also picked up a big win at Franklin's Gardens. I mean, I suppose it's just nothing surprises us in the Premiership. What we do know is that there will be a new champion at the end of the season, because Saracens, you know, won't be contesting the top of the table, and no one seems to be running away with it, which I guess is probably what happens when you have a salary cap at the top.
But it's a really good league. Is that not what we're saying? I mean,
yeah, no, I mean, I think it's exciting.
All those games, you didn't know which way they were going to go. I mean, yeah. I think Exeter are probably a class above at the moment.
Yeah.
But what a great league. I mean, it's unpredictable.
Yeah, it's a great league. Although,
it's kind of like sport, really, isn't it?
I still can't get my head round, and I should do, because I've been a player for a long, long time, and I've been retired for a long time. I still can't get my head round.
Oh, that comeback, Lawrence.
Premiership rugby.
Get back onto that in a minute.
Premiership rugby matches happening during the Six Nations. It just feels strange to me, because I just find it odd. Just seeing, you know, teams missing players from either side that could equally be playing in them.
You go to all the trouble to raise those players or to sign them in, and if you're a sponsor or a fan, you want to see your players. And the number of times players are not available for their clubs is ludicrous.
Yeah.
Absolutely ludicrous.
But okay.
Can I just disagree with you both, though?
Yeah, go on.
I think the problem with the Premiership is Exeter, I thought, were bloody ironclad on Friday. Gloucester gave him a real good go. I thought Exeter, I think they're way out ahead, maybe not in terms of points, but I think there is a massive mid-table which goes from the third to the 12th club.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? One win and the Leicester and Wasps of this world, who are seemingly languishing down the bottom, are up in fourth and fifth.
Yeah.
So it's and what feels really weird about the season is that was round 10 of the Premiership, and we are, we're now sort of halfway through the Six Nations, and yet we've still got another 12 rounds of Prem rugby to go. But
Lawrence, can I make a sensible point here?
What's that?
Well, so you say you don't like a league weekend in the middle of the Six Nations, doesn't feel right. Completely agree. Jonesy, you say the sponsors don't want that, they want their stars
fans,
out.
Fans, yeah.
We all want that. Okay, so we all agree on that.
Well, both grounds were packed, by the way, but there's only packed because they're desperate to see some rugby.
So we all agree it's not ideal. The clubs don't like it because it's not so good for sponsorship, etc., etc. So what they want to do is not have Premiership League weekends overlapping with the Six Nations, which means that we get a longer season, and we now got this season ending in the middle of June. So you can't have it both ways. I'm not saying there's a solution here. It's a rugby doesn't work situation.
I think it goes down to who's running the game and who's funding the game.
Yes.
If I was a broadcaster and I work for one, I wouldn't be happy that the competition that I pay lots of money for gets second, third fiddle at key times during the season.
Would you be happy having a season that ends mid to late June when everyone's really switched off and gone on to other sports and the players are then sort of forced into playing a 9-10 month season? You can't have it both ways.
Which is why we have a playoff scenario, because it's not first past the post. Because if it was first past the post and you lost, six or seven of your players every week, it's a bit of a challenge. So, look, I get it, but I just thought I'd have a little moment. Let's just talk a little bit about Di Young. Obviously, just to put on the record there, Wasps have decided to relieve him of his responsibilities, but I'm reliably informed that there will be a statement of sorts in the next day or so. Had there been a relegation battle, I'm pretty sure Di Young would still be in the dugout at Wasps. But obviously Wasps, for whatever reason, have decided to expedite that decision, move that forward, and look like they're heading in a very different direction. I would like to say on the record that Di Young, his status with Wasps fans and as a director of rugby, as a head coach of this club, is as great as any of his predecessors. He's had 9 very good years at the club, didn't manage to win a trophy. His summit was probably the final. They were 80 seconds away or 30 seconds away from lifting the Premiership trophy. But he saved my club. He saved our club from extinction. And for that, he will be revered by Wasps fans.
Yeah, Jonesy, what do you reckon? Pretty heartless by the Wasps board to do that, to cut cut their man?
Well,
what do you make of those people on that board who've made that decision?
I don't know. They should stand up for public scrutiny, I think, don't you?
Listen, can we just say that I've been publicly executed several times? Once by an organisation in this building, in fact. But I'm here and they're not anymore. So there we go.
This building's done you more than once, isn't it?
I tell you, what was a part of a revolution, and it's been joyous. It's been, when you go up there and see the facilities that they got and the crowds they got and the new fans they brought into the game, it is absolutely joyous. And if you're a rugby person, you just want that to carry on. And David, I've got massive respect for. He's done wonders there. Probably shouldn't let Danny go, maybe, but I think he's a great lad. I hope he stays somewhere in the locality. But I can sort of see that they needed to kick on.
That decision, Danny Cipriani out and Lima Sopawanga in, had he gone the other way, I mean, to what extent did that one decision define
I think it's huge, and I think, as hard a player as he might argue that Danny Cipriani is to manage, he would probably, if there's one decision he would change, it would be that one, because that player that he let go went on to become the Premiership Player of the Year the following season. So there's no doubt that he's had to manage Wasps' movement from London as a club to a new franchise in the Midlands. And I think, that for anyone at the top of the tree is a very difficult thing to do. He's had to manage getting the keys to the toy shop, if you like, and having, the budget to buy all sorts of wonderful players, and then maybe manage a slightly different set of circumstances in the last couple of years. So, he's had a lot to contend with, no doubt about that. And I'm sure that, everyone at Wasps will wish him well. We must move on. God and Goddess of the Week. Jonesy, is there any contenders? Is there one outright winner for you?
Yes, there is one for me. And probably not the most glamorous player ever, but I watched most of the rugby on the weekend, and one man who's not first choice anymore was superb for his club. He was the man of the match, as he's been superb ever since they got into the top division. Gareth Steenson, they tend not to pick him now when Joe Simmons is fit. But that guy kicked them to victory in the first game they ever played in the Premiership against Gloucester. I was there. He's kept them going ever since. What he does for team spirit is amazing, because he's got his own bar all the lads go to have a drink at. And even in the teeth of the Gloucester whirlwind on and off the field, I thought he was superb and justly made man of the match. My hero and god of the week is Gareth Steenson.
Very good. Very good.
I mean,
has anyone in this section of the podcast ever nominated themselves? Sounds a bit self-orientated, but seriously, if you'd seen me on the off-piste on the Alps on Thursday afternoon, you'd have gone, that is the God of the Week. Sorry to go on about it, but it was outstanding. I didn't see a lot of rugby, but I did see my lovely little S-shape down the off-piste. Absolute joy. There's only one God of the Week, and that is me on skis.
People say I'm arrogant. Wow. Wow. I think it was a case of mistaken identity, Slotty. We did see someone skiing beautifully in the Alps, but it certainly wasn't you. That's for sure. My God of the Week has to be Dai Young. It's been a very difficult week for him. It's been a very difficult week for Wasps. But that man, as I said to you, has done an amazing shift at the rugby club that I played for 20 years. He saved us from relegation. You know, he was buying strapping and tape for the players, and he's wonderfully lifted the club and made them a force to be reckoned with in the West Midlands. So he won't feel like it today or for the next few days, but my God of the Week is David Young.
Very good.
There's
very
two good. Out of three really strong contenders there.
Yeah, what? Dai Young was worth a contender, wasn't he?
My thanks to Owen Slott and to Stephen Jones. The next episode of our new series, How to Win a Grand Slam, will be out on Thursday morning. Owen is in conversation with former Wales prop Adam Jones. The Ruck is back next Monday. Make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe now via Acast, iTunes, or your preferred podcast provider.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.